1320 WILS. Great to have you here. I'm Michael Cohen. So what's the future of the energy industry? We see Donald Trump now taking some steps to maybe change things around. Robert Rapier is with us, a man who's had over two decades of experience in the energy industry as an engineer, an investor also, author of the book Power Plays, Energy Options in the Age of Peak Oil. Robert Rapier here with us on WILS. Robert, great to have you.
Thanks for having me on, Mike.
Yeah. Well, what do you think so far of what you've seen from Donald Trump when it comes to energy?
I would say he's done exactly what I thought he would do. I mean, there were some really easy decisions for him to make that I thought would happen. One of those was going ahead and pushing the pipeline through in North Dakota. I thought, you know, regardless of your feelings one way or the other about the way that all played out, I felt like the Obama administration overstepped its authority there toward the end, and I thought that decision is probably going to get undone. The pipeline was 97% complete, and I thought that's the first thing he's going to do. He's going to come in, and he's going to write an executive order, and that's going to get completed. And so I made that my number one prediction for this year was that oil would flow through that pipeline, and now they're saying within 90 days, oil will flow through that pipeline.
What does that do for energy prices then?
Well, it potentially, there's a couple of things. I mean, the reason they want an oil pipeline out of there is so they can get more oil out of there and potentially get a better price for their oil in around North Dakota. So it potentially raises prices a little bit in that area, but then at the destination, you put more supplies at the destination, it potentially lowers prices there. So overall, it probably has a little bit of a mitigating effect, especially as projects like the Keystone XL pipeline, same thing. You got potentially oil sands prices coming up a little bit, but all this production coming down to the Gulf Coast where it will potentially mitigate prices a little bit. So the average person in America will probably see a little bit lower gas prices, but locally some people may see higher gas prices because that's just simply the reason they're putting these projects in, so they can get better prices.
Your book is Power Plays, Energy Options in the Age of Peak Oil. Are we in peak oil right now then?
We are not in peak oil. We are, you know, there's a few years ago. In fact, it's funny, the title of that, I argued with my publisher because I didn't really want peak oil in there because I don't want to be associated with some of the fringe elements of peak oil. I was involved in a lot of the debates around peak oil in 2005, 2006, and my argument was we're not quite there yet. And that was before the shale boom took off and put a lot of new oil supplies on the market. Mm-hmm. So I think we're not quite there, and we may be a decade away, we may be two decades away.
I'm curious, in 20 years, do you think technology will be to the point where we may not be as reliant on oil in a significant way?
You know, electric cars are interesting. Their numbers will continue to increase, I think, but you know, the developing world is developing on oil, and oil production or oil demand worldwide over the past 35 years has increased at about 1 million barrels a day every year. So we've increased in the last 30 years, say, we've increased oil demand by 35 million barrels. And that happened last year, and it happened the year before, and it's happening even as these electric cars hit the market. Mm-hmm. And the reason is the overall mobility of the world is going up. You know, electric car numbers are increasing, but just the conventional car production in the U.S. last year increased by about 1 million cars.
Demand will continue to go up then year by year, though?
Demand for oil will continue to go up.
What about that shale boom that was unpredicted? Could we see something similar happen?
Well, I mean, the black swans like that, you just never know, but you know, it's hard to see a magic bullet in the oil sector. I mean, you know, it's really, really hard to compete with oil, something that, you know, Mother Nature created for us, and Mother Nature supplied all the heat and the pressure and the time to convert it into oil. And it is a very rich, energy-dense substance that, for example, the guys trying to make biofuels to compete with that, they have to replicate all those Mother Nature inputs in real time, and that is very difficult to do.
And you, in fact, you wrote about what's happening in biofuels. You're a contributor to Forbes magazine, and you write about these firms that are going under. What is happening in the biofuel industry?
The main thing is most of these guys, particularly in the advanced biofuels, just really underestimated the difficulty in converting biomass like waste, wood, and things like that into fuel. It's very complicated. It's easy to convert, say, sawdust into an oil, but then to clean it up and to make it into a fuel, very, very challenging, technically challenging. Mm-hmm. The economics are not good. You have to spend a lot of money on the back end to clean up this, clean up this product. And that's essentially what happened with Keyor. You know, a few years ago, Keyor came on the scene and they claimed that that's what they were going to do. They were going to turn wood chips into fuel. And the technology did exist, but the cost was
too high.
Really, really high.
Is there a point where biofuel just won't work and they'll give up on it?
It depends. I think there's a role, like for ethanol, as an octane booster, and there are certain benefits that it has in the fuel supply. But the reason we have as much in the fuel supply as we do is that it's mandated that we do.
Is that something we should be supporting in general this way? Or?
I'm supportive of biofuels. I don't think they should be mandated. I think especially areas like Iowa, if I was the governor of Iowa, I would do everything I could to make sure that the ethanol we produce in Iowa stays in Iowa and is used in Iowa. Instead, Iowa sends out all their ethanol and they backfill with gasoline when they could be self-sufficient on ethanol production. But they need to, put in their own tax schemes to encourage people to buy 85% ethanol, E85. That's the way it should be, I think. Ethanol makes more sense in some locations than others. It doesn't necessarily make sense, to ship ethanol from Iowa to California or New York. I mean, the logistics get expensive, and they've got much cheaper fuel options. Iowa, they should be using their ethanol.
Tell me this, Robert Rapier here on WILS. Tell me what are we in for then? If this peak oil is coming, right? You said in about two decades we could really see some effects. How's this going to impact our standard of living here?
Well, I would say that, first of all, nobody knows the future. I mean, it could happen a lot sooner than that, and there are a lot of people that are predicting it'll happen a lot sooner than that. Peak oil would be devastating. I mean, there was a reason there was a lot of interest in this, 10 years ago. The idea that every year there's a little less oil production than the year before, that would have really devastating impact financially around the world. You would see oil prices go very, very high. I've seen people argue that the world economy will collapse above, $75 oil because it really can't sustain that for very long. I don't believe that.
Are we preparing for this as a country? Is the government somehow preparing for this?
We were preparing for this a little bit more. I think the shale oil boom has sort of gotten people to relax a little bit and not be so concerned about it because it doesn't look like it's as pressing a concern right away. And, if it's I forget who said it, but they, someone about this problem said, we've only got two speeds, complacency and emergency. I mean, that's, that's how we respond. We only respond to emergencies or otherwise we're complacent about it.
What are we going to do, though, really? Once that occurs, what are the options going to be?
Realistically, probably to consume a lot less than we consume now. I mean, there will still be a lot of oil production for even, decades from now. There will still be oil production. But to sustainably use liquid fuels, say from biomass, mm-hmm. we'd have to consume significantly less than we consume now. There's no way to fill that gap. Now, electric cars, you could envision a future in which electric cars are being powered by solar, wind, a combination of nuclear power and maybe some natural gas. Mm-hmm. We could potentially be a fairly mobile society, but we will not be able to consume the amount of oil we consume now. And we really don't know what that future looks like because we don't really have any experience. If you look around the world, even the greenest countries still consume a lot of oil. They mm-hmm. consume. Some of the countries that we think about, like Iceland, that has such a high percentage of electricity production from renewable resources like geothermal and hydropower, mm-hmm. they still consume a lot of oil, and most of their cars are by oil.
Right, and well, we have that option now. Without that option, could nuclear power step in to fill the gap?
Yeah, I think just about any way you look at it, and I'm an engineer, and if I look at the problem on paper, I say I don't see any way we can meet our future power demands without nuclear power.
Is that going to be the main? You think that's where we should be heading to, really, for power?
Well, we're heading to natural gas. I mean, a lot of people don't realize that. You know, coal got mostly knocked out by natural gas, not renewables. So natural gas has become so cheap, and the regulations have sort of pushed us in the direction of natural gas. Mm-hmm. But, you know, nuclear, if you can get past the sort of environmental concerns, nuclear makes a lot of sense. China and India are going in nuclear like crazy. They're building a lot of plants over the next few decades. They've got a lot in plan. Mm-hmm. And that will displace, otherwise they would have built coal-fired power plants.
And you think their concern is this peak oil issue, too? Is that why they're looking ahead?
Their concerns are a couple. I'm sure they're concerned about their carbon dioxide emissions. You know, China is the number one emitter of carbon dioxide in the world. And a lot of their cities, I'm sure you've seen the pictures, are, you know, full of coal pollution. And it's really bad. And they don't have quite the natural gas that we have. They really don't have – they are putting a lot of money in renewables over there, but they also need firm power. You need firm power to back up renewables. And I think the nuclear will serve as their firm power, you know, kind of evening out their grid.
And we've got the natural gas. Is there a peak natural gas, too? Is there such a thing?
Yeah, sure, there is, but it's looking like that's pretty far off. We do have a lot of natural gas.
Well, that's good news. Robert Rapier, over 2 decades of experience in the energy industry, contributor to Forbes magazine, author of the book Power Plays, Energy Options in the Age of Peak Oil. Robert Rapier, right here on WILS. Robert, it's been enlightening. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me on, Mike.
And we'll be right back. I'm Michael Cohen. This is 1320 WILS.